This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
All right, this is episode number 9 of the Until the Whistle podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Myers. Happy to be back. Happy to be back on air and recording. The weather is dropping a little bit here in Austin. It's the day after Halloween. My God, it's already November 1st. Where did this year go? Good grief. November 1st. That means we have very, very little football left. And here we are coming off of our Texas Longhorns taking an L in Stillwater. So we're going to, you know, definitely get into that. But with this temperature dropping some, I decided to crack open a bottle of whiskey that I talked about before that I got from Ireland. So about this time last year, maybe it was December last year, I had a trip that I took to Cork, Ireland for work. And while I was there, made my way over to Middleton, Ireland, which isn't too far from Cork where I was working. And there they have the Jameson Distillery. So for anybody that, you know, is into Jameson, they have a number of different whiskeys. But the ones that I chose to bring back were ones that you couldn't get in the States. So this particular bottle that I bought was called Method and Madness. And what they name it for is basically the masters, the whiskey masters, and then their apprentices kind of joined up to come up with their own whiskey. And so it kind of takes some of the tradition that they've used, but then they use some unordinary or unorthodox methods that maybe you wouldn't typically use when it comes to selecting the cask that they are in or what it's finished in. So typically with their whiskeys, they finish things off in the oak family. But, for this particular one, they decided to change it up some. So, like I said, this is a Method and Madness. It's a single pot still Irish whiskey. And what they did is they matured it in sherry and bourbon barrels, and then they finished it off in French chestnut barrels. So the nose on it, it says it's red licorice laces, fresh rosemary and mint, grated root ginger. The taste on it is sweet fruit and spice, a little bit of cinnamon toast and ripe banana. And then the finish on it is a aromatic green tea, dissipating fruit and spice, and then rich wood farewell. So really good whiskey, really good for this time of the year, 46% alcohol volume. And so, yeah, if you ever get a chance to go to Ireland, I highly, highly recommend going to the Jameson Distillery. They do a really good job of giving you some solid pours, taking you around, giving you some of the history of what, the Jameson Distillery has come from. And they do a really good job of, kind of explaining it all. And then if you choose to, you can do a private whiskey tasting, which I did do. And I definitely thought it was worth it. So that's something I would recommend to any and everybody. But hopefully everybody's doing well. Like I said, it's a little chilly, been raining a whole lot here in Austin. We finally got that boil ban lifted. So I know that I'm happy about that. I was getting tired of having to drink out of bottled water and all that mess. But all that's behind us now. The calendar has changed to a new month. We're down to, basically the last full month of football. And if you really, kind of get down to it, Texas only has, 4 games left, So to start this season out, any number of outcomes were on the table. But here we are, November 1st, sitting at 6-2, now ranked, I think, number 17 in the country, if I'm not mistaken. So dropped pretty far in the rankings. But if you think about it, to be fair, we didn't really deserve to be number 6 in the first place, in my opinion. I think it was more so, we vaulted up in the rankings after beating OU, which I think was deserved. But more than anything, some of the attrition that happened ahead of us is what, you know, caused us to climb, you know, to number six. Do I think we were necessarily the number six best team in the country at the time? I personally don't, but, you know, that's not for me to decide. That's for the pollsters. That's for the coaches in the coaches poll, you know. And so some of the things that were starting to take shape, some of the things that were starting to become important on the national landscape aren't quite as important anymore. And maybe that helps this team, because what I saw in Stillwater was a team that was not all that disciplined. Lacked a good amount of focus and, you know, quite frankly, a team that I think, and again, I'm not in this locker room, so it's hard for me to, you know, be too judgmental having, you know, been through it and knowing what that's like. But I think this team got to smelling themselves a little bit, as my dad would say. So, you know, you have this much success. And we talked about this some last week with Aaron, which, by the way, was great to have him on and got a lot of good reviews about that. So we'll probably have him on again, as well as some of my other teammates. But we talked about, you know, how do they handle prosperity? You know, how do they handle having a bye week and getting the opportunity to go back home or, you know, wherever it is they're from, take some time off away from football? And how was that going to impact things? And we saw that, you know, there was a few guys on the team that didn't, you know, handle it the way you would like them to. And unfortunately, they were some of the leaders, or, you know, some of your what you would like to be your senior leaders in Chris Boyd and Devontae Davis. And then someone who I think has grown to be a leader on the offensive side of the ball and little Jordan Humphrey. And so those are things you never want to see happen. Now, you know, don't know exactly what was the cause of the, you know, suspensions, and you hate the timing of it. But, you know, I know I heard Emmanuel Acho, and we'll kind of get to some of that as well before I get into the game. You know, the little spat between he and Chris Boyd. But I think I heard him saying, you know, that you have to find a better way to punish the team because it punishes everyone. But, you know, that goes back to, I guess, kind of what I've alluded to before, and that the best teams police themselves. The best teams don't allow this kind of thing to happen because, you know, they're so concerned with letting their brother down on their team, their teammates down, that you don't want to deal with your teammates' wrath. It's not even so much what the coaches are going to do to you. You know, it's not even so much getting suspended or anything like that. It's, I don't want to hear my teammates' mouths. I don't want to potentially have to fight one of my teammates. I mean, that's what it comes down to sometimes, because you get so few Saturdays out of the year to go out there and put on display everything that you've worked for in the off season, everything that you've worked for over the summer, everything that you've worked for in two-a-days or fall camp, whatever you want to call it. And when you look at all of that, you know, you think of all those days that goes into it, all that work, all that sweat, all the, you know, time and attention and energy that's put into it. And when it's all said and done, you're only guaranteed 12 Saturdays. 12. That's what you're guaranteed. For a year, you're guaranteed 12 Saturdays. And because they didn't take that responsibility seriously enough, it impacted the game, you know. And I'm never one to, you know, pinpoint blame, but you would have to say that a significant amount of blame lies with, you know, those two guys. I mean, it's tough to look at, you know, the fact that with 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, Texas is down 24-7. And for the first four drives, their top two cornerbacks are out against one of the better, you know, offenses in the Big 12. And so it's a frustrating loss. And you could even see some more of the frustration and you know, in my opinion, some need for additional maturity when Chris Boyd went on his social media and he called out Emmanuel Acho for, you know, talking noise. And in some respects, you know, I give him a bit of a pass, and I'll say, and this is why, Chris Boyd is coming up in an era of social media where that's what these kids know. That's what these guys are used to. That is the way they form, you know, some of their friendships during the recruiting process is, you know, via them communicating with other guys across social media. You know, they've truly come, they're truly the first generation, I think, that's come up with social media being as prominent as it is and being an avenue for you to speak your voice. And while Emmanuel Acho is a commentator now for ESPN, he's not that far removed from playing the game himself. And, you know, I think there's a fine line of, you know, just commenting on the program and then, you know, kind of taking some personal digs at particular people, you know. And so he made, you know, one Twitter post that said, you know, bro, you can't be late to meetings, then come out here and get mossed. And, you know, for anyone that doesn't know what the term mossed is, it comes from exactly what it sounds. Randy Moss used to, you know, routinely just out jump defenders. And what a defender seemingly looked like he was in good position, Randy Moss would jump up over them and it became a verb. It became you got mossed when, you know, a spectacular catch was made on a defender. And so, you know, it happened so often that that term has carried on. So when Acho was talking about that and Wallace, Tylan Wallace during the game, mossed Chris Boyd, you know, he jumped up over him and made that catch for a touchdown. It was apparent that, you know, there's only one person you can be talking about here. And if you're talking about somebody else, you didn't put any name to it. And so I think more than anything, and, you know, and then he followed that up with, you know, another tweet about an hour later about, I can't watch this dude play defense anymore. It's actually trash. If you know, you know. Now, I think someone, you know, along the line said that particular comment wasn't about Boyd, but there's enough ambiguity. There was enough commentary from Acho that it made it seem like, you know, he was talking about Chris Boyd still. And so the reason why I kind of set the stage for Chris Boyd coming up in this era of social media is in, you know, for the most part, in my opinion, Emmanuel Acho called him out via social media. And whereas I think in my day, you know, one, the social media wasn't around for that to be the case. But two, I think that would have been a man-to-man conversation that was had. Or, you know, would like to at least would like to think so, where if I heard that you had said something about me, well, I'm going to address it with you. I'm not going to address it with you in a manner that the entire world can sit back and watch and see. And so I think in some respects, Chris Boyd maybe looked at it as, OK, you disrespected me in this regard. You're supposed to be part of this Longhorn Brotherhood. You know, even though you are a commentator, you're supposed to be part of this Longhorn Brotherhood. And, you know, it's, you know, I think Boyd just really felt disrespected. That being said, when you're late to practice or meetings or whatever the case may be, when you end up getting suspended, when your play on the field, you know, doesn't quite live up to what it would need to in order to help your team secure a victory, you open yourself up for that, right? I mean, if you go out there and you ball out, there's not a whole lot a person can say. So I see both sides of it. I think it's petty. I think it is a sign of a team that still, you know, doesn't really know how to handle wins and losses fully. And it's a sign that they're still growing to do. And you know, one of the unfortunate things is it's coming from, you know, a senior. So, you know, you would just like to see the team respond better than this. All right, I'm still here. Had to take a sip. So, I mean, I guess let's talk a little bit about the game itself. You know, like I mentioned, Oklahoma State rushed out to an early lead. And one of the things that I questioned, you know, and I've heard some talk about this, but in six of the eight games this year, the defense has given up a score on the first drive. And I'm kind of the opinion that when you're in a situation like that, for whatever reason, why that continues to happen, I'm certainly sure that, you know, that's something the team has tried to address this past week. I know about that. I'm sure it's something that Todd Orlando was already aware of. If he wasn't, you know, then shame on him. But, you know, it's interesting that that happens. And then you go on the road at night to a place like Stillwater that's very difficult to play. You know, I've talked before about how the stands are arranged in such a manner that the fans are right on top of you. And you have your quarterback, you know, that's seemingly healthy and coming back. It's Halloween weekend, so, you know, college students are a little rowdier. It's their homecoming. They're celebrating the anniversary of Barry Sanders' you know, magical season there. And they're wearing throwback jerseys, you know, and I know that sounds silly, but like kids really get up for that kind of stuff these days. And so with all that working against you, I'm typically one that prefers, you know, my team to defer to the second half when they win the toss. But in a situation like this, it just makes me feel like, OK, you got the crowd buzzing. Why don't we do something a little different? Why don't we, you know, if I know that I'm suspending my top two corners for a quarter, why don't we try and put them on their heels? Why don't we go out, punch them in the mouth early, try and take the crowd out of the game early? And I think that was a missed opportunity. And I'm not sure if any, you know, I'm sure someone's asked Coach Herman about that, you know, whether he admits it or not. I'd be willing to bet that that's something that he has possibly second guessed or at least thought back on. But I mean, good grief, like right out the gate, you can tell that it is just going to be what look almost like a boat racing. I mean, you bench your starting two quarterbacks for the first quarter. And in that quarter, Oklahoma State's rang up 260 yards. That is the second most yardage given up in a quarter in the last 15 years for Texas. I mean, that is just, it's absurd. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. I don't know how you have everything before 16 ranked in the country. You know, got to know the history of these games and how, you know, Texas has some struggles in the first half, but, you know, I'm sorry, I'm struggling to find the right words because it's frustrating almost that this is a game that a casual fan could kind of spot from a mile away that would be a team like this. And so you would think that that's kind of all they would need. You know, they would have all the motivation necessary. You're almost in the conversation for the college football playoff. I mean, that's how close these guys were. They were number six in the country. So, you know, who's to say that when the rankings opened up that they weren't going to be significantly higher if they had taken care of business at Oklahoma State? And we're talking about the same Oklahoma State that had 12 points and 311 yards on 63 plays the week prior against Kansas State. That's the same Oklahoma State team that rang up 17 points, 260 yards on 27 plays in the first quarter against. I'm going to say that one more time. Oklahoma State had 12 points, 311 yards, three plays for an entire game against Kansas State. Lost that game 31-12. To Kansas State, a team that Texas beat in the first quarter against Texas, 17 points, 260 yards, 27 points. As valiant of an effort it was for them to come back, as hard as they fought, as well as they buckled down in the second half defensively, in some respects, at least point-wise, that's just not going to get it done. That is not a winning formula for football. when you allow that kind of yardage, and I mean, it wasn't even just, you know, methodical plays. There were big chunk plays that Texas was giving up. Tylan Wallace had touchdowns of 40 yards, 36 yards. Like, that's just, it's inexcusable. It really is. And it's sad. The very first drive that they had the ball, it was four plays, 53 yards. A minute 48 comes off the clock and they're already down 7-0. Now, Texas responded very well by scoring, you know, and I think Sam did a great job of leading the team back down the field, was having some success with Keontae Ingram. You know, we always kind of champion for Keontae Ingram to get more and more carries. But in this one, the game just got away from them. They had to get away from the run game. You know, we talked about how Kansas State had so much success by running the ball on the ground, but we put ourselves in a position where we weren't going to be able to do that. I mean, you look up, and at one point in the second quarter, the game is 24-7. We've talked before about the importance of, you know, at the beginning of the game, going into and coming out of a half, how important it is to really buckle down. And if you have the ball, to, you know, score. And if you don't have the ball, to stop the other team from scoring. Well, the minute 17 left in the second quarter, going into halftime, already down 24-14, Tylan Wallace catches his second touchdown of the game, 36-yard pass from Taylor Cornelius. So you're looking at the score and it's 31-14, and Vince Young's not walking through that door. You know, and I say that, but I need to walk that back for a second, because I think Sam did a good job of leading this team. I think he grew up. He was quietly putting together a pretty good game. Now, he was 22 of 42, and that's not going to get it done. You know, you don't want to be right at 50%, but some of those were some drop balls. He had some guys let him down offensively. But all in all, 22 of 42 for 283 yards, two touchdowns, passing, no interceptions. You'll take that. He had another 10 carries for 47 yards and another two touchdowns. So, you know, he was responsible for four touchdowns on the day. You'll take that, you know, coming from your quarterback. You can kind of win with that. And, you know, so I think the bigger story here really was the defense, you know, just continuing to give up chunk plays, having difficulty getting off the field has been something that has plagued this team all year, and something that, you know, offensively can certainly do a better job of. But, you know, had a 50% third down efficiency. So, you know, Oklahoma State converted 10 of their 20 third downs. And then on fourth down, they converted two of them. So in total, you know, they rolled up 502 yards. But if you think about how they got started, you know, the Texas defense finally kind of knuckled up some. And, well, I can't even go as far to say that it was fully the Texas defense, because it seemed like when they were running tempo, when Oklahoma State was running with tempo in the first half, they were really clicking. And for some reason, Mike Gundy went away from that. And he did Texas a favor in doing that. They ran the ball 51 times for 181 yards on the ground. But what killed them, they ran the ball well with their quarterback, which was kind of astounding to me, right? Like, Taylor Cornelius is not known as some mobile quarterback yet. Time and time again, you found him, you know, getting loose on read options that just flat out someone should have held contained and made a play. And I mean, really, that was kind of the story of the game. I mean, yeah, Justice Hill got his, but he had to work for it. 23 carries on 92 yards. He had a long of 27. So, I mean, if you take that one away, he's 22 carries for what's that, 65 yards? I mean, that's not too shabby defensively in terms of holding the guy in check. And it's not like Taylor Cornelius had a ton of yards. I mean, he only had 23 yards when it was all said and done, but he had two touchdowns. And he threw for another three. The kid threw 23 for 34, 321 yards. So, you know, Texas was having trouble keeping him off his spot, getting pressure on him, and allowed him to just kind of sit back there and pick him apart. And when it was all said and done, Tylan Wallace was the star of the game. He's probably the best receiver in the Big 12. I don't know how that's not something that, you know, these guys weren't aware of, but when you're playing without your starting two corners, I can see how some of that stuff can happen. But 10 receptions, 222 yards, and two touchdowns, he had a day. He owned the secondary. And one of the things that, you know, we didn't see that we typically see is Caden Stearns come up with the big play. He didn't have, you know, the fortune of that. Now, you know, defensively, you know, Gary Johnson, he seemed like he showed up. He had 10 tackles on the day and 2.5 for loss, including a sack. Charles Amenihu added another sack. But, you know, for a lot of the game, there was some key guys that you would hope, you know, are making better plays, better adjustments on the ball. And it looked like, you know, Saturday night, Caden Stearns looked a little bit like a freshman. PJ Locke got caught in a couple of situations where, you know, once again, I've always said, if I were an opposing coach, I'm looking up PJ Locke and Chris Boyd every game and attacking them, because for all of the accolades that Chris Boyd has received and some of the acclaim for him going first round, he tends to have some lapses. Now, what I will say about him that I think is very impressive is he tends to bounce back. So even if you score on him, you know, he tends to find a way to work himself back into the game. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just this defense, it gives me, it makes me scratch my head a little bit. They're not creating the turnovers at the rate that they've been created. And they're just making, you know, some mistakes that are real head scratchers. You know, when Brandon Jones fields that punt, you know, that deep in Texas territory, sets the offense up in a position to, you know, have to go the length of the field. And you don't want to have to do that when you're on the road in a hostile environment. You want to do what you can to, control field position. And, you know, Texas just didn't do a great job of that. The punter, just because I'm going to call him the punter, not because I don't say, what is Tom Herman doesn't say punters' names or kickers' names, something like that, until they graduate. But I'm just going to call him the punter because I don't know how to say his last name. I think it's Buchevsky, something like that. But he had a decent night. You know, he didn't do too terrible. He had a punt of 55 yards, you know, so he did what you could ask of him. But you know, this game was there for the taking. And, you know, I got to give Texas credit for scrapping and clawing, fighting to get back in the game. But when you put yourself in a hole like that on the road and you have a team that, you know, isn't used to winning, isn't used to, you know, comeback victories on the road, at some point they got to learn, yes. But, you know, certainly this was not the ideal spot. Oklahoma State controlled the ball for almost 10 more minutes than Texas. They had the ball for 34 minutes to Texas's 25. Like I said earlier, they ran up 502 yards of offense. And so that's about what you expect that they would do, you know, offensively. And, you know, I think that's kind of where I lay this game. I mean, despite all the mistakes, despite all of the errors, despite the guys being benched in the first quarter, this team, the Texas Longhorns, still had an opportunity to win the game at the end, and just couldn't get key stops defensively when they needed it. And so that's the thing I think that I find most disappointing, is you would expect that, you know, the offense would take its lumps from time to time, but I guess I expected more of this defense. I expect the defense to generate some more turnovers. I don't think they're generating turnovers. Gotta take another sip. Don't think they're generating turnovers at the rate that they generated turnovers last year. And then at the same time, they're being penalized a lot. So, you know, that just comes down to focus and discipline. Still seeing too many delay of games and false starts and offsides and just things that comes down to the fundamentals of football. And so, you know, it's a tough loss, but, you know, all is not lost. They still can control their destiny somewhat. But I'll be honest, I don't know how much faith I have in them to do it, you know, because now there's four games left in the season and all bets are off. You know, anything is possible at this point. They're sitting at 4-1 in the conference, still hold some tiebreakers, but there is a lot, you know, at stake. And, you know, one of the things that's difficult is they're going to go into this game against West Virginia. And one of their senior defensive leaders, senior defensive captain, Chris Nelson, is going to miss the game. He rolled his ankle in practice on Tuesday. And so as a result, he's not going to be available for the game. And so Gerald Wilbon's going to have to make a start instead of him. He came into the season with one career start. And, you know, Chris Nelson had really stepped up and kind of, you know, began to become that guy there in the middle that could really do some damage. And so it's going to be a tough game. You know, West Virginia is going to come in with a lot of firepower and the ability to really challenge Texas in a lot of the ways that Oklahoma State did. And it's not going to be an easy task when dealing with the Mountaineers. They certainly have a formidable offense. Their defense does a pretty good job. And so there's a lot that the Longhorns are going to have to prepare for. And you don't have to look too far either. I mean, West Virginia has a common opponent with us in Baylor that was relatively recent. And West Virginia lit them up, okay? They had a 31-point second quarter. And this is against Baylor. What was this? I guess this was last Thursday night. So a week ago against Baylor, they ended up beating Baylor 58-14. This is a Baylor team that Texas struggled with. I mean, let's call it for what it is. Texas struggled with Baylor. And, you know, David Sills had a day. He had 5 receptions for 139 yards and 2 touchdowns against them. And, you know, they're not all of the short variety. One of his touchdowns was 65 yards. So they got guys that can go to distance. They rolled up 568 yards of offense. So they're going to come into this game with a lot of swagger about them. You know, they're going to come into this game wanting to avenge. Last year, Will Grier is leading the way. And so is up back up to number 13 in the country now. Will Grier has West Virginia's averaging right at 40 points a game, and they're barely allowing 20 points a game. So it's going to be all hands on deck this week. I don't think all is lost for the Longhorns, but since in a number of games, they're going to have to do what Coach Brown used to always tell us, not let one game beat you twice. You know, last year, Will Grier had a season-ending injury to his throwing hand in the first quarter against Texas. And, you know, Texas was able to, you know, do so. You know, they're going to have revenge on their minds and really going to be looking to square off. And I think, you know, Dana Holgorsen even made a quote. And, you know, they've had a little extra time to prepare, given that they played Thursday night. And then we're probably even able to sit back and watch the game on Saturday. So. You know, they've played. I don't think they're going to be surprised by the environment. Most of them, you know, it's going to be a good test. Only the 8th time that West Virginia and Texas have met, and West Virginia leads the series. They're 4. It's been kind of split down the middle since West Virginia's joined the Big 12, with holds sway over us as of late, as they've won 3 of the 20. And so I don't think they're going to be, you know, afraid of anything that this Texas team has to offer, but it should be a good game. I think I read where it's sold out, so it's going to be a packed house. The weather has cooled off a little bit. Wish it was a night game so guys could be, you know, folks could be a little more riled up, but it's a 2:30 kick. And so it's going to take, you know, Texas's best effort to turn around quickly from a really disappointing loss, turn around quickly from, you know, kind of being the toast of the town, if you will, to everyone kind of sitting there and wondering, oh, what's next? And coming out and putting together a full performance where they can be proud of the, you know, what they put on film and what they put out there on the field. So I'll be looking forward to see how the team responds. And I think the game is really going to be important just to set the tone for how they're going to finish the year. You know, like I said, there's only four games left. After this week, you got a really tough road game that's going to be tricky against Texas Tech. Then you come back home and play a scrappy Iowa State team and then finish out with Kansas. And Kansas beat TCU. So, you know, I don't even know what to make of that. I don't know if that's more of an indictment against TCU or if it's saying that Kansas is slightly better than they are most years. I don't know. But, you know, I would love to sit here and say that this team is, you know, incapable of losing to Kansas. But we've seen that happen before. So it's a tough position to be in as a fan, because just as easily as I could see them running the table and going 4-0 and sitting there with a 10-2 record, I could see a scenario where they went 1-3 down the stretch and the only game they won was Kansas. I could see that happening. They should have the talent to be better than everybody that they play, but it's a matter of, do they put it all together each and every game and just come with it on every play and have their teammates back, have their brothers back in a way that that really shows some growth and maturity. So that's really all I got this week. It's been another fun episode. I've enjoyed getting to talk back on some of my thoughts from the Oklahoma State game and what's to come. I'll definitely be back next week with the recap of the West Virginia game and then to preview the Texas Tech game. But as always, you know, we're down to the last 2 months of the year. If there are things you're still looking to accomplish, you still got some time before the calendar turns to 2019. So just, you know, do what you can to finish this year strong. I know during the holidays, it's sometimes tough on folks. And, you know, I have some personal experience with that as well. But just do what you can to do what you can. And I will see you guys when the next whistle blows. This has been Marcus Myers for Until the Whistle Podcast. Thanks for listening.